Welcome, everyone. I'm Warren Giroux with Sightline Wealth Management. Today, I'm here with Ramesh Kachap and Terrence Wong of Nine Point Partners, who are responsible for the management of the Nine Point Alternative Income Fund. Today, we're going to have a review of the 2021 performance and also their outlook for 2022. So welcome to both of you. Let's start with a review of 2021. How did your fund finish up? Were there any highlights that you would like to mention to our listeners?
Yeah, thanks, Warren. Thanks for having us. So throughout 2021, we've been very happy with the performance of the fund. Throughout the year, as of the end of December, the fund returned approximately 8.34%. And that is above our target range. And a lot of it has to do with several factors. For one of our funds in the strategy, the Marketplace Lending Fund, managed by Morgan Stanley, has performed out of the park. This strategy had the opportunity to hold a small equity position on one of the marketplace lending platforms, and they are able to realize and exit that opportunity. And they were also able to see increased opportunities in securitizing the portfolio and sell portions at a gain. So that fund has returned 24% to the Nine Point Alternative Income Fund. And across the board, all our strategies have performed very well. We're very happy with the credit quality of all our portfolios. And if you look at how the fund has performed throughout COVID and into 2021, our exposure to the non-performing loans have decreased. Going into COVID, that our exposure has been about 5% to non-performing loans. Today, we're at about 1.5%. And the primary reason for this is because the strategies that we invest in, a lot of the businesses are focused on essential businesses. So we haven't had a lot of companies in the portfolio that took a hit from COVID. And with that said, we're very happy with our portfolio and how it's performed.
That's fantastic, Terrence. Thanks. Thanks again, Warren, for having us. It's Ramesh, and you know, I just wanted to add to what Terrence is saying. One is really the credit quality of the portfolio. Like Terrence mentioned, it has only improved since pre-COVID to today. Number one, and the pipeline you know that we had in 2021 was fantastic. So that means that our underwriters and our funds are able to be highly selective in in underwriting transactions. That means quality transactions, going into the book, and that is reflected in the return. Would this return repeat itself every year? I hope so, but maybe not. We are always keeping our target return for this fund between 6% and 8%. So our focus remains, on capital preservation. That is the ultimate purpose of this fund, is preserve capital and provide a very good risk-adjusted return for investors.
Can I ask a question regarding that Morgan Stanley return of 24%? What is the likelihood of them repeating that? Is that a one-off deal? I mean, do they have any additional equity exposure in their lenders that they're involved with that may...
Great question, Warren. That return obviously in 2021, is reflected is a one-off deal. But having said that, Morgan Stanley's strategy is not to necessarily buy and hold all the loans that they buy. They do have a securitization strategy. They do have a selling strategy. Obviously, it has to be all accretive to the investor if they're going to exercise that. So they have that in the toolkit. In the toolkit, they have those strategies they could exercise throughout the year, including, potentially having equity in, one of the platforms they invest in. But like Warren, like you said, I hope they can repeat that in 2022 and beyond. But it cannot be necessarily to happen, because if you look at the strategy and their target return expectations for their investors, it's 8 to 10%. And we're going to still hold to that. And anything above that would be a bonus.
Okay, thanks. I just sort of get into the weeds a little bit with the portfolio regarding how the composition, what is the percentage allocation to each one of your funds, and what is the geographic composition of the total portfolio as well?
Yep. So the way we structure the portfolio, the majority of it will be senior secured private debt. Currently, private debt represents about 80% of the portfolio, of which 25% is in the Nine Point Tech Private Credit Fund, 26% is in the Monroe U.S. Private Debt Fund, and 18% in the Canadian Senior Debt Fund. The remaining 12% is in the Morgan Stanley Alternative Lending Fund. With that said, this private debt exposure we're fairly comfortable with, and we expect to maintain within our target allocations at this point. This part of the portfolio is supplemented by a liquidity sleeve made up of marketable credit securities and cash. Together, that makes up about 18.5% at the end of December, and we have about 1% in AIP convertible private debt fund.
And to add to that, Warren, our cash requirement, typically, we would like to have, under 5% cash, but given the market dynamics, we're taking a very conservative approach and maintaining close to the range between 15 and 20%. Cash or cash-like in the fund. So we can really take advantage of the opportunities that might exist in these underlying strategies as they look through 2022, because 2022 for private debt is going to be another blockbuster year following 2021. So that means that there's a lot of good deals to be had with good return that we would want to pass on to the investors. Obviously we are being very selective, mindful, I should say, of style drift. So it doesn't happen. We're not in the business of growing AUM for the sake of growing AUM. That's number one. So I would rather say, look, I can't do any more transactions, or I won't take any money because I can't do any more transactions, versus taking the money and not doing the transactions and having a cash drag. So we're very mindful of that. At the same token, we're also mindful of the fact that there is some external factors in the Canadian market that has affected private debt funds, and then we're taking a very conservative approach and maintaining more cash than required, at least in the near term.
And then, Warren, to answer your second question, in terms of the other exposures, from a sector perspective, we're highly diversified. The top three industries make up about 45% of the portfolio, and that is industrials, information technology, and energy. One thing I just want to highlight for the technology sector, these aren't new companies. These are long-standing middle-market companies generating recurring revenue. So they have strong cash flows, and they operate more on the software-as-a-service industry sector. And from a geography perspective, we're approximately 50% U.S. and the remainder in Canada.
Okay, thank you. Ramesh, back to the liquidity issue or liquidity question. I was talking to, I think, Terrence a week or so ago, and he said that you were looking to possibly add a couple of enhancements to your liquidity sleeve by diversifying the portfolio. Do you care to comment on that or give us any sort of heads up?
In terms of adding strategies to the portfolio,
So what we have done over the past year to enhance our marketable credit securities sleeve is we added the convertible securities fund and the alternative credit opportunities fund. Yeah. And the objective of that was for us to diversify away from the credit income ops fund, not because that fund is not performing well. It has performed very well year to date and throughout the inception of the fund. It's just we want to be able, if we were to access liquidity, be able to ensure that we're able to access all of it. So we won't have, we won't be able to lock certain of our investments because we have a run on the underlying fund.
Yeah, and key to that, Warren, is, right, and as you would know better than probably I do, is that we don't want to be a market maker, so to speak, in these funds because, as a large holder of those assets, we don't want to be in a situation where we would affect the liquidity of that marketable securities fund. Hence, we diversified into some big funds, which is the Columbia Threadneedle one, the convertible securities fund, and obviously the alternative credit fund as well. It just gives us a little bit more diversified approach to managing liquidity, which I think is probably very conservative given the market situation.
Yeah, it certainly is topical. There's no question about it. The We've certainly seen a lot of negative headlines in the news, so it's good to know that you were providing a more liquid liquidity component to the portfolio to protect the fund against adverse conditions. Let's talk about leverage for a minute. Now, I stand to be corrected, but my understanding is that Ninepoint itself is not using or using minimal leverage or no leverage whatsoever. But what about the individual managers? Are they using a large component of leverage, or how does that work? How do you manage that?
That's a great question, Warren. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, most of the time, you know, people do get disillusioned, I should say, when they look at private debt returns. And most of the time, the big providers of private debt, the likes of Apollo, Ares, Carlyle, et cetera, use leverage. It's usually leveraged returns. We, on the other hand, just to be clear, at the NAIF level, at the Art Income Fund top level, there is no leverage. Zero leverage, and we don't plan on putting any leverage. That's number one. Within the underlying funds, there is two funds out there with leverage, which is Monroe Capital and Morgan Stanley. Monroe Capital, usually puts on, leverage, in excess of 2x the fund, and usually, in their other funds. But in our fund, we have limited that to under 2. Right now, they're only at 0.90. So they're not even at one turn leverage in the underlying strategy, not at the top level again. That's number one. On the Morgan Stanley, they can put on leverage up to, I think, half a turn. They're around, I think, 0.30 or 3.5, on leverage. You know, leverage is not actually a bad tool. I don't want to really attach negative connotation to leverage, but like just we all know, in our own personal finances, anything excessive, that means excessive leverage, like in the old CLO days, Warren, you might understand, like where the leverage went up to 8, 9, 10 turns. That's greedy, and that's you should be fearful of that from a risk perspective. So yes, leverage is bad when you take it up to that level, but leverage is actually good if you can manage it, within a turn or 2 turns the fund, because you can benefit from the spread. It's a spread business at that point, where you're borrowing money at LIBOR or SOFR plus 3 or 4, which is like under 5%, and lending it out at 8, 9, 10, 11%, and all to the benefit of the investor. So, it's a good thing. So, but having said that, Third Eye doesn't have leverage. Canadian Senior Debt does not have leverage. AIP, which is in the fund, which is less than 1%, but nevertheless, I mentioned it, does not have leverage. The only two are Monroe and Morgan Stanley at a very, very nominal level.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything else that you think our listeners would be interested in? Like, I was wondering about the pipeline coming up. Are you looking at any new strategies for 2021 other than the, or 2022, sorry, other than the liquidity sleeve? Do you have any indication that you're going to be looking at and bringing on some new strategies?
Great question. Great question. We are thinking about that continuously. I'll tell you why. One of the things that when we structured this fund or designed this fund back in 2016 was the fact that we want to keep, we want to make this a truly diversified approach to accessing private credit. Diversified, number one, complementary, number two, and we established a number of criteria, for many strategies to come into the fund. We have about 5 criteria that they have to meet. I'll just kind of walk you through a few. One is it has to be income generating. Number two, it has to be private debt, primarily in senior secured, but we will look at other things. Number two, it has to have distribution, in most extent. And number three, it has to be, like I said, senior secured with conservative values, with focus on capital preservation. It can be equity. We try to stay away from real estate. Nothing wrong with real estate, but a lot of investors have their own real estate portfolios. So it has to meet all the criteria. And we're going through this exercise throughout the year, but we had identified a couple, it didn't really fit, but we have identified 2 real strategies right now that we are working through, from a modeling perspective to see how accretive they are to the return, number one, and how do they, kind of balance out the risk and how complementary they are to existing strategies. We really don't want, we are not in the business of doubling down on strategies. I don't want to add another Monroe. I don't want to add another Third Eye Capital. I don't want to add another senior debt. So because we want to find complementary strategies so they all move in different directions. So we have identified 2. with some really global players. These are global players with massive AUMs, you know, under their umbrella. We're going through the numbers. If they make sense, we might put them in, because my goal and Terrence's goal really in managing this fund is to keep exposure to the underlying strategies not more than 20-25% of the fund AUM. So, right now, like Terrence said, Third Eye, we're about just north of 25%, and same thing with Monroe. Nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly good, but we would like to be closer between 20 and 25 versus greater than 25. And as the fund is growing, because we got a massive institutional investor come into the fund for $60 million a couple of weeks ago, and we have a few more institutional investors that are very interested in participating in the fund, which we think they will come in the next 30 to 90 days. And that could be in tens of millions. And that that will create a problem for us. Number two things. One is concentration with underlying strategies. Number two is ability to deploy capital. Because remember, we actively manage where the capital goes, on a monthly basis, every month. So it's we look at pipeline, we look at loan maturities, where there's a little cash drag, that's where the capital goes. The capital allocation is a big part of this exercise. So we want to be able to deploy capital and not necessarily sit in cash, in complementary strategies.
Now, Ramesh, do you have a limit on to how much you'll allocate to a particular manager?
Yeah, that limit is usually around 20-25% of the fund AUM.
Yeah, and that limit fluctuates. It's set internally based on our views on what the strategy and how the strategies are performing. But with that said, that's the band we've been investing in.
Yeah, it's not a just to be clear, Warren, like Terrence said, it's not a legal requirement. It's not in the in the offering memorandum or anything. But from a risk management perspective, and actually to try to manage a risk adjusted view of return, we have come up internally and said 20-25% of the fund AUM should be the maximum amount that we would invest in any one manager.
Okay. I have to ask you one other question. It's probably not the kindest question, but what's the process that Ninepoint is going to use or would use if they found a manager who was not sticking to his knitting, if he was not following his process and he was sort of going outside the mandate that you had originally hired that manager for? What is the process that you would use to, I guess, terminate that manager?
Very valid, very valid. I'll take maybe a step back and kind of go back to all the diligence we do on the manager. Number one, obviously, and we usually, when we negotiate with the manager and have discussions with the manager, we require an exclusive agreement, legal binding agreement that has to be signed between Ninepoint and the manager, meaning that they cannot go out and solicit or work with another group in Canada, at least, in a similar product. So they have to both parties have to sign that. And that agreement, Warren, gives us certain tools of what we can and we cannot do. We can obviously terminate the manager for cause immediately. For cause, number one. Number two, to your point about manager drifting in style, our diligence process have been designed so that we can detect the style drift, proactively. Meaning, we try to be very little reactive, but more proactively kind of engaging and seeing, connecting the dots and saying that, is this manager kind of going out the box to put money to work? Which, in this environment, Warren, it could happen easily because the amount of capital raised is are available to put to use is many times greater than the amount of transactions that are available. So because of that, there is a temptation by the managers to do that. And our job is to really make sure that manager does not exercise on that temptation, and we monitor that proactively to make sure that there's no drift in style. So let's assume, they are drifting in style. We have designed two things to detect that. One is obviously month to month, week to week meetings, we will detect that. But a formal evaluation of the manager happens twice a year. We have designed what we call a manager scorecard review. So a scorecard for each manager has been established with different things of criteria. You know, it could be, you know, from return to risk levels, to loan to values, to covenants, to the, you know, to the amount of capital that they require, want to deploy, you know, all that good stuff has to, you know, go in there. We have established the criteria and we sit down with the manager at the end of 6 months in the year and at the end of 12. So we are doing our scorecard reviews for 2021 with all the managers right now. And basically that kind of, you know, it's like a performance evaluation for you. It looks at how the 2021 was, what you did good or what you did correct, what you did not do correctly. You know, that happens obviously in the middle of the year to course correct, right? Because my view on course correction is it's better to correct course while you're driving versus after reaching the destination and finding out that you ended up in the wrong place. So I would rather do a mid-year and say, hey, where are we? You know, are we on track? You know, we established all the goals for 2022 at the beginning of 2022 from a scorecard perspective. So we evaluate that manager against those goals that we set together in January 2022, in June, July 2022. And then we say, you know, is there any course correction required? Are you in the right direction? You know, we said we're going to go east. Are we going east? Are we going north? If we're going north, we better change. Otherwise, you're on notice. So then we go back to the legal agreement where that provides us the tool to say, you know, within, you know, 180-day notice or 120-day notice, depending on the supervisor, where we could, you know, wind down the fund, which we did with trade finance, as we know, not because they were drifting in style, it's just that the business, we couldn't gather enough business from a insurance perspective. Insured transactions was very limited, you know, after one of the big factoring players went down in UK. And the coverage went down. So in that case, we will have a discussion with the manager and terminate them, and give them notice and then terminate them and either move the assets to a different manager or wind down the assets. So we do have tools. One is we can cut off subscriptions. Number one, the minute we see drift in style. Number two, we start redemptions. And number three, obviously, you know, the wind down, happens and orderly, you know, wind down of the fund would be probably in the best interest of the, you know, for all investors. So we do have the tools to do those things if we do detect, a drift in style.
Oh, thank you. I should have asked you this earlier. How many, I know you're the head of the team, Ramesh, but how many individual analysts like Terry do you actually have watching all your various funds that you're investing in?
So one of the things that I always, believed in, Warren, I've talked to you many times, is subject matter expertise and specialization. It is very hard, when people say I'm, jack of all trades. No, jack of all trades does not work in our business. You know, you need to be a specialist. So in that sense, Terrence works with me, obviously, on the NAFE, the Altim component, but he's dedicated, coverage responsibilities for Canadian senior debt, and River Rock Mortgage Investment Corp. David Sum, who's one of my colleagues in the team, he's responsible for Monroe Capital and Third Eye Capital. And Charles Dixon, is responsible for Morgan Stanley and AIP. And Michael Kam, who just joined us, worked with us, and mostly on public
security.
Yeah, on convertible in the Columbia Threadneedle Convertible Securities Fund and the International Small Cap. So we have, we had another person who had joined from Allbourne. Unfortunately, he had some family issues, in Hong Kong that he actually, physically moved to Hong Kong, quit the job here, took the entire family, went to Hong Kong. But I'm in the process of replacing that person with maybe one or two more individuals, which would make my team approximately 8 people, full time, and with dedicated coverage across all the supervisors. So we have an intimate knowledge, of the portfolio, issues, communication, obviously, pipeline maturities, subscriptions, redemptions, all that stuff, so that we can have a kind of holistic picture and feel comfortable with any one supervisor or strategy.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything else that you think our listeners should be aware of or know about your fund before we wrap it up?
Terrence, you have anything? Maybe in 2022 outlook, some of the private, what's happening in the industry?
Yeah, in terms of how our fund's positioned, as Ramesh has mentioned, we are sitting on slightly above our cash target, and both from to manage a liquidity perspective, but that also allows us to deploy capital fairly quickly on where we see fit.
With 2022, we do see a lot of interest in private debt, both from an investor perspective and from a borrower perspective. A lot of these companies after 2021 and after 2020, they are looking to build up and invest in their own companies. So a lot of opportunities in investing in their technology, their own technology, improving their supply chains. A lot of this will drive M&A activity as well as add-on financing for our underlying sub-advisors. So we do see that coming in 2022, and we are prepared to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and one thing I want to all warn is, you know, I know that, you know, in Canada, you know, we have been kind of brought down by the some of the market external events or market events, I should say, where private debt has been mentioned, in many write-ups. Private debt has been talked about in many write-ups, I would say mostly negatively. You know, unfortunately, it's mostly negative. But you know, people have completely forgotten what the positive side of that asset class looks like, because they've got cut it away. And I'm not saying that the investors are not affected, but you have to balance both sides. So when you look at the other side, private debt has probably one of the best fundraising years, in 2021, compared to 2020, they had like $194 billion, right? So they went into the asset class, new money. 80% of the people, institutional investors that surveyed intend to increase their allocation to private debt. And we are seeing that with our own institutional group in Nine Point. You know, I've had calls just now. I just came out of a call with an insurance company who wants to invest, approximately 10% of the $10 billion portfolio, into this thing, right? So at the end of the day, that's $1 billion. So there's many conversations like that. So the asset class itself has done extremely well. It has withstood, very resilient asset class, to be honest. It has withstood COVID. It has withstood the market event in Canada, has done extremely well. The credit quality is good. The 2022 looks like another banner year, because one of our supervisors, I was talking to them a couple of days ago, Monroe Capital, they're sitting on $2 billion of backlog. So if you, I asked them, I said, so Monroe, $2 billion backlog, where is it coming from? Like one, like Terrence said, a huge amount of M&A transactions that kind of held up in the pipeline for COVID is happening. Number two is the upsizing of existing transactions as well, because a lot of the companies are going through a growth phase with demand, you know, outstripping supply. So you combine that, you look at where the money is needed. $2 billion is one example. You know, Canadian senior debt. You know, we're seeing, you know, his pipeline is massive. You know, up to $100 to $200 million. Same thing with Arif at Third Eye Capital. You know, he has $300 to $400 million at different stages of diligence that he could close on in the next, 90 days. So if you look at all that, you see a huge demand, for private debt money. And from a risk adjusted basis, you know, those are all very solid transactions. So that means you can be highly selective, because you're seeing 100 deals and you're doing five. So that means you're being highly selective. So all those things point to an excellent 2022, Warren. And I would tell the investor, you have to really keep the big picture here in mind, and really keep the view of the forest. Even though the view of the tree is important, view of the forest, and really kind of separate the good from the bad. You know, I'm not saying that every player in private debt is a good player. There's going to be some bad actors, and you know, we had that here, and period. That's it. You know, why are you penalizing the asset class because of that? So 2022, from an outlook perspective, looks great for us as an asset class, looks great for us, with all our sub-advisors. Our credit quality is where it needs to be, and probably better than it was in December 2019. So we are sitting on a great position, obviously in a very opportunistic role, where we can exercise and contribute or invest in transactions that investors could benefit, particularly given the increasing interest rate environment that we are in, which if you look at Ashwath Damodaran, who is a professor at NYU, he says the only way to get out of this high inflation environment is to go into a recession. You know, that's his view, and he probably is right, because inflation is very sticky. It's very hard to get rid of it, and you need to have a series of interest rate increases, and that's going to happen. And where are you going to find yields? you have to find yields in private markets, because public markets are going to be hard to get, and public equities is a, you know, whole different animal.
Yeah, it certainly is. I one of the things we like at Sightline about the 9-point private debt fund, or alternative income fund, I should say, sorry, is the diversification that it offers and the opportunity in the asset class itself, because it's diversified among loan types and so forth. So anyway, I think we'll wrap it up with that. I want to thank you both for taking the time, and we certainly look forward to speaking with you both in the future. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.